60s pop and indie rock. This show will debut the release of their new album, Bloody Mary. Opening the show are Spaceport and Second Spring. More information about Lake Dobby's album release show is available at thecedar.org.
From Minneapolis's historic West Bank, you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We're streaming and archived on KFAI.org. It's where community has always grown.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, a youth job training program gets state funding. Then, how Minnesotans can get energy assistance this winter. And a St. Paul restaurant is named one of the nation's best. I'm Gracie J. The Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, is investing nearly $5 million to help young people access workforce training and career opportunities. The Youth at Work Opportunity Grants will support 39 organizations serving youth of color, youth with disabilities, and young people facing economic or systemic barriers. Participants ages 14 to 24 will connect with training and good-paying jobs in high-growth industries. DEED leaders say the funding strengthens both communities and Minnesota's future workforce by helping young people build skills and pursue economic stability. In today's main story, as temperatures go down, many families in the state look for assistance to cover energy bills. But applications for state programs can be confusing. Jose Osoria helps to sort through the confusion.
With winter now upon us, the Minnesota Department of Commerce is urging eligible households to apply now for energy assistance through Minnesota's federally funded energy assistance program. Michael Schmitz, the director of the energy assistance program for the Department of Commerce, says that Minnesotans who need the assistance must apply now.
It's really important for Minnesotans to take actions to stay safe and warm. Today it's a lot colder and it's only going to get colder. To help people, we need to get those applications in so our local service providers can process them, and then we can start helping people pay for their heating bills, their electricity.
Mr. Schmitz points out that even though federal funding for the program has been delayed due to the recent government shutdown, the department anticipates receiving funding matching that from previous years.
So last year we received $125 million. It typically takes about a month for us to get our award once the Congress passes a budget. So it does look like it'll be kind of a similar amount to what it was last year.
In this section, please enter the company or utility name that heats your home. For, let's say, the city of Minneapolis, I get my natural gas and heating bill from CenterPoint Energy. I'll enter the name on the account and enter the account number.
The Department of Commerce's website provides detailed information on the application process and the various energy assistance programs. However, there is a threshold for a household to be eligible.
Our income threshold is 50% of the state median income, and what that means in more concrete terms, so for a family of four, you could earn up to about $71,000 per year and qualify for the program. And, you know, that dollar amount changes depending on how large or small your family is.
The amount provided to pay bills also varies based on this criteria.
We're hoping to average around $560, but it can range to as much as $1,400 depending on how low your income is and or how high your energy costs are.
Minnesota's energy assistance program is not exclusive to homeowners.
We do provide bill payment assistance to renters. Sometimes if you might have just a bill, your electric bill in your name, you might be able to make a payment to your electric bill if your heat's in your landlord's name. We have additional benefits for folks who are facing a disconnection or for seniors who have a past due bill. You can get an additional crisis benefit. We also are able to pay for, you know, a delivery of wood or other biofuels like corn pellets, those kinds of things.
January 2025 marked the coldest air temperatures recorded in nearly 4 years in Minnesota, dropping anywhere near negative 10 to negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit. You can apply for the Energy Assistance Program online by contacting your local community action agency or by calling the program directly. The deadline to apply is May 31st, 2026. For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
You're listening to North Star Stories. Well, a St. Paul restaurant is getting national recognition. Jones in the Park has been named to OpenTable's 2025 list of the top 100 restaurants in the country. The 40-seat restaurant earned its spot based on customer reviews and booking demand, not critic rankings. Jones currently holds a 5-star rating with more than 2,200 reviews. OpenTable says the annual list highlights restaurants diners love most based on real customer experiences across the United States.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, a court victory for renters in the state. Then, how a city in the north is revitalizing its rail corridor. And a project that's going to provide more reliable energy for northern Minnesota. I'm Chantel Saints. A bipartisan coalition of 9 states has reached a proposed settlement with Gray Star Management Services, the nation's largest landlord. The company was accused of helping manipulate rental prices. A lawsuit claims a property management software provider collected sensitive pricing data from landlords and used it to generate rental recommendations based on competitors' information. The state attorney general said that it allowed landlords to coordinate prices and reduce market competition, driving up rent for consumers. Next, a new development project in northern Minnesota aims to transform the remnants of a long-abandoned rail industry. News director Chelsea Perkins from Ampers member station KAXE-KBXE spoke with Victor Palomino about what it could mean for the community.
Many northern Minnesota towns were built around the railroad. Today, some of those spaces sit abandoned. But according to a report from Amber's member station, KAXE and KBXE, the city of Bemidji now has a new vision for its rail corridor.
So it's kind of just been this area of land that's been a bugaboo for the city and for developers. And like, what do we do with this? And in the last couple of years, there's been quite a bit of movement in developing that area.
That's Chelsea Perkins, news director for KAXE and KBXE. She says that the plan includes space for a potential YMCA, but community excitement is focused on a major development investment that could reshape the area.
Most recently, we learned about a $22.5 million hotel, event center, and restaurant that would be built in that corridor. It's an Alexandria-based real estate development firm that has announced that they're going to pursue this project. And what I found interesting was that, you know, they said that we didn't realize that Bemidji had so much potential, that this community could support a project of this size. And I mean, it would be 98 rooms in this Marriott hotel that they're planning.
One challenge for the project is soil contamination from decades of industrial use along the tracks, but city officials are aware of the issue.
And they've said that they're going to do all their due diligence to make sure that the soil contamination in the area is cleaned up. The city has owned this site since the early 2000s, so they've been aware of some of the issues that they needed to kind of move through in order to develop it.
Another surprise that might complicate the construction can come from the area's history.
There was some concern at one point that there may perhaps be ancient skeletal remains in the area. The mayor told us that they're pretty confident that's not going to be an issue with this particular development, but there's always a possibility of that, and they'll do as much as they can to ensure that the site is prepared for this kind of development.
Despite this, the community is excited about the possible economic boost and opportunities for the region.
Bemidji is a big university town, and so I expect, too, that it will also be an attraction from that perspective where people are coming to check out the university, coming to watch the Beavers play in their various athletic events, and that will have another place to stay.
For now, the project is moving forward with developers beginning site preparations.
And the construction on the YMCA and the hotel are expected to begin as soon as summer of 2026. So we'll likely see some action there as early as next summer, and we'll see.
You can find this story and more coverage from the Northern Minnesota News on the KAXE website. For North Star Stories, I'm Victor Palomino.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Great River Energy, a not-for-profit wholesale electric power cooperative, has begun construction on the $1.4 billion Northland Reliability Project in the Iron Range. The 180-mile high-voltage transmission line is designed to deliver 3,000 megawatts of power across Minnesota and the Midwest by 2030. The cooperative says the project will strengthen grid reliability and move electricity from a wide mix of energy sources.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
A new report offers recommendations for Minnesota's health system. Then, industry layoffs are affecting people living with disabilities in the Twin Cities. And the state is getting a new professional sports league. I'm Gracie J. The Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH, is asking lawmakers to study the state's healthcare system for current and future capacity needs. The recommendation comes as part of a legislative report based on public feedback, expert input, and MDH analysis. Key recommendations include analyzing existing facilities and workforce, collecting new data, evaluating the role of private investment, and expanding community engagement. MDH estimates the full study would take about 2 years. Next, a Twin Cities disability service organization has announced its closure, leaving hundreds of disabled adults without personalized care and support. Catherine DeSalle talks to those affected by the layoffs.
My age came into my mind right away. I thought, where am I going to find a job now at 84?
That's Dennis Morgan, who recently found out he was losing his job with Dependable Home Health Care, an agency located in St. Paul that finds clients living with disabilities who need help with daily activities like cooking, banking, shopping, or transportation, and pairs them with a direct support professional. Dennis was employed with Dependable for around 8 years as a direct support professional, a job where he helped care for Mike, a man with an intellectual disability.
Mike got an email, and Mike told me I had no idea that they were closing. It was a kind of a shock. I didn't know if I should believe it. I thought, why didn't they contact me? I thought I had a better rapport with the company.
Dependable was founded in 1991 and serves clients across the Twin Cities and surrounding area. Earlier this month, Dependable sent an email to all of their clients and over 400 employees stating they'll be closing their doors in January. Mike was confused when he received the email.
I thought it was addressed to actually me, that just continuing my service. And then I read more. It's everyone. I was a little shocked, surprised.
Angela Jackson is another Dependable employee who cares for Mike. She also received an email from Dependable saying,
"Dear Dependable employee, after careful consideration, we have made the difficult business decision to discontinue services and close Dependable. Our top priority is a smooth transition. Dependable will be offering contact information to our partner brands as a way for individuals to transition services."
Angela, Dennis, and Mike say they've reached out to Dependable, but no response. They've also not received any follow-up information about other companies and organizations that offer similar services. Mike did his own research, though, and found a new company where he is now on the waiting list.
First, I called my social worker, and we got an email right back from them. They're putting me on top of the list.
Katie Fleury, CEO of Dependable, gave this response as to why the company is closing. Quote, "The decision was made in response to several factors, including increasing operational costs, difficulty recruiting and retaining staff, and recent legislative changes in the regulatory environment, such as reductions in allowable service hours and lower rates of overnight care," end quote. The Minnesota Department of Human Services recently called the shortage of direct support professionals a crisis, stating that one out of every 50 Minnesotans relies on some type of support to meet their daily needs. Dependable will officially close its doors at the end of January in 2026. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
You're listening to North Star Stories. League One Volleyball, or LOVB, is bringing a professional team to Minnesota in 2027. LOVB leaders say the state is a perfect home for the sport thanks to its strong fan base and deep talent pool.
According to LOVB, Minnesota ranks fourth in the nation for girls' high school volleyball participation, saying championships often sell out. Two local volleyball clubs train more than 680 athletes each year and regularly send players to top college and national programs. Launch preparations are underway as LOVB looks to build a direct path from youth clubs to the professional level.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, a Twin Cities community will have a new place for worship. Then, a look at how rural grocery stores fight to keep their doors open. And a winter trail returns to the Iron Range. I'm Chantel Sings. Muslims living in the southern suburbs of the Twin Cities will soon have a new mosque. The Lakeville City Council approved the mosque, which will operate in an existing building and can host about 150 people. Muslim residents filled City Hall to support the project, saying the mosque will provide a local place for worship and community service. Some residents raised concerns about parking and traffic, but the mosque will share a 75-space lot with a nearby ice rink. Currently, the nearest mosques for Lakeville residents are about 20 minutes away. In today's main story, Minnesota's rural grocers are balancing costs in an industry known for its razor-thin profit margins. Britt Ahmet talks to one of these store owners about a program that's trying to help.
Rural grocery stores are lifelines for their communities, but in recent years, Grigla, a small self-reliant town in Minnesota's northwest, was about to lose its one and only grocery.
Farmer took it over and was like, I need to keep this store open. The next grocery store, it's 40 miles.
Lifelong Grigla resident Cheyenne Earlbeck had started clerking at the store in high school. She was in college getting a degree in business administration when the farmer took over. She'd come back on holidays to work.
He had it for 2.5 years, whatever, and he was ready for someone who wanted it. That's where I came into the story.
Cheyenne, at only 21 years old, became the new owner of Grigla General Store. According to a 2020 survey undertaken by Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships, or RSDP, at the University of Minnesota, nearly half of the state's rural grocers worried about closing in the next 5 years.
People don't want to see their grocery store go away.
Zachary Page works with the RSDP, which has been helping rural grocery stores like Cheyenne's find the money and the expertise they need to keep going.
It's a food source for elders in the community, for people that can't get to that nearest town 30 miles away, people in low-income brackets that can't make that commute.
RSDP doesn't know how many stores have closed since the survey. They're working on an updated one. But Zach says many store owners are feeling the pinch of higher food prices, competition from big box chains, and the ongoing challenge of finding enough workers. In some cases, they're one big expense away from a really bad year.
Yeah, so grocery is just really hard. It's a 1% profit margin industry.
Cheyenne knows this firsthand.
My store operates on very small margin, and a cooler goes down, a freezer goes down, and you're looking at so much money out of pocket. And to be honest, I don't have that money because it's just the way the cookie crumbles.
RSDP is there to assist with finding loans and grants. It also offers, among other things, guidance in produce handling, marketing, finance, and...
If someone's just starting out, there's a few training online courses for new store owners.
Cheyenne Earlbeck got a crash course in store ownership 4 years ago. Her Grigla General Store is a century-old building. Electricity alone costs $70 or more a day, and there's limited space. But she manages to carry the staples and a little of a lot of things. What makes this rural store work is that she's committed to it, and so are her customers.
A lot of people will say, like, well, if it's not at the general store, you don't need it. And I think that's hilarious because they're patrons and they're just being so loyal to me. But I just keep expanding and making sure that I can give everybody everything they need.
This is Britt Ahmet for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A free multi-use winter trail will return this year at the Virginia Golf Course in the Mesabi Iron Range in northern Minnesota. The trail offers cross-country skiing, skijoring, fat biking, and snowshoeing to the public. The Winter for All Trail debuted last season and is maintained and prepared by volunteers from Masabi Recreation. The Iron Range Partnership for Sustainability supports the project with local organizations, businesses, and the City of Virginia.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the State of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's segment, police arrest a federal law enforcement employee as part of a sting. Then, how state regulations have left many confused about plant and fungi gathering. And help for farmers left unpaid after a grain distribution company closes its doors. I'm Gracie J. Bloomington police arrested an Immigration and Customs Enforcement employee saying he solicited sex from a 17-year-old during an undercover sting. According to a criminal complaint, 41-year-old Alexander Stephen Back responded to an online prostitution ad in a Twin Cities suburb and continued texting even after learning the girl was underage. The Hennepin County Attorney's Office is prosecuting the case. Back is free on bond and returns to court later this month. Next, interest in mushroom and wild plant gathering has surged in recent years, but the state's patchwork of rules has left many foragers confused about what's allowed. Zan Holston has more.
In Minnesota, you need a permit to hunt and fish. Now, lawmakers are rethinking the rules that govern foraging mushrooms, berries, and other wild plants on state-managed land.
Right now, our policies are very restrictive.
State Senator Susan Pah, who represents parts of the North Metro, is leading a task force looking at foraging along with the Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, naturalists, mycologists, tribal representatives, and the general public.
Versus leaving it to just the DNR to do rulemaking around it without public input.
Senator Paw said the task force was spurred by a growing interest among new foragers, as well as concerns about restrictive policies by those who have been gathering for years. The current rules aren't cohesive. State parks and forests, as well as other state-run sites, all have different regulations about what can be picked, ranging from nothing to very small amounts.
As a forager myself, I've always found that the state lacks a lot of information when it comes to foraging.
While fishing and hunting have clear bag limits and online license portals, the process of getting a foraging permit to harvest plants at a state forest is out of date. Permits have to be purchased in person at the DNR forestry office closest to where you want to forage, paid by check or money order only. Then you need to
fill out a form that says what you're going to harvest, where you're going to harvest, and how much you're going to harvest.
Peter Marniaco is president of the Minnesota Mycological Society and one of the task force members frustrated with the DNR's red tape. He said if you get a permit to harvest fiddlehead ferns, but come across some ramps, a type of wild onion, you can't pick them.
You're not even allowed to have permits for both of them at the same time.
Martin Yako said wild plant permits were designed for commercial harvesters and amount to a practical ban on personal foraging. But the issues go beyond that.
This is not just about foraging. It's also about public land access.
Land access is especially important to tribal community members, like Dakota and Ojibwe author and educator Tara Perrone. She said DNR restrictions create barriers to teaching Indigenous children about their traditional medicine.
That's hard to do when I have to say, oh, these are traditional to us and our people, but you can't touch that because maybe it's sprayed or it's illegal.
Perrone spoke at a recent task force listening session about why cultural practices need to be a part of the policy conversation.
Being able to gift that to our young people and our elders is really important to me, and I will fight until my dying day to have that right.
She hopes the task force will be a path toward more people connecting with the natural world while centering Indigenous voices and rights.
It's spaces like this to have these open conversations where we can really make headway for our future.
The task force is hosting more public listening sessions in early December and plans to release its recommendations to the state legislature in late February. More information is available on the state legislative website. For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture is urging farmers who worked with Hansen Mueller Company to file claims after the grain buyer declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy this month. The company, which operated in Duluth, helped farmers sell, transport, and process grain. Farmers who are owed money can submit a claim to the state's Department of Agriculture, while those holding warehouse receipts must contact the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The state says farmers should file a claim as soon as possible.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock. This week, we look at how federal cuts to public broadcasting are affecting tribal radio stations and a local leader's reflection after attending this year's climate change conference. First, after major funding cuts for public media, what's next for tribal radio? Producer CJ Younger has more.
For hyperlocal tribal radio stations, the loss of funding and support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, which was eliminated in July of this year, is carving away emergency services, community connection, and Native representation on air.
It could be that there's a flood or a wildfire and you can't find your local station on the air anymore.
That's Rima Dael, CEO of the National Federation for Community Broadcasters. Often, tribal stations are the only local radio in the area on reservations or remote areas of northern Minnesota. But emergency services aren't all that's at risk.
Tribal stations are tribal community gathering places.
You're listening to KOJB 90.1 FM, The Eagle.
For hyperlocal stories and news on tribal matters, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe has KOJB.
I think it's important that each community has a voice.
That's Chris Bedeau, station manager for KOJB, which lost about 35% of its funding after CPB was eliminated.
We're more informative with our PSAs, our health, our jobs, you know, all that kind of thing there too. We're working with folks that are underserved.
KOJB's airwaves are full of programming you just wouldn't find on non-native stations.
Bonjour, Guinoa, Ajuak Indigenous. Ajuak is my name, bringing you Niji Radio's Ojibwe phrase of the day.
KKWE is another tribal station that lost over 50% of their funding when CPB was cut. Both KOJB and KKWE are members of AMPERS. Short over $200,000, KKWE is hoping to operate on a volunteer basis to keep Native programming on air. Maggie Rosu is the station manager for KKWE, a community hub for the White Earth Nation.
We do have hope. We feel like we're going to be able to make it. We're going to survive one way or another. We can't go dead air because we're important for the healing of our people.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm CJ Younger.
Next, producer Dan Ninham speaks with the Indigenous Environmental Network Executive Director, Tom Goldtooth, about his time at COP30 in Brazil.
At this year's United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP30, held in Brazil last month, Minnesotans participated in the International Indigenous Peoples Forum on Climate Change. One was Tom B.K. Goldtooth, Dene and Dakota, who is executive director of the Bemidji-based organization Indigenous Environmental Network.
Reality says that we have to move away from a fossil fuel dependency. That's what our platform has been as IEN and working with other Indigenous peoples.
A big part of demands from Indigenous people and allies at COP30 was a call for a just transition. Tom says that this originally came from the labor movement.
Workers were concerned about toxic chemicals, so that became known as a just transition. And as Native American Indian and Alaska Native, just transition means putting to use our traditional knowledge in a modern world, being principled and ethical in the way that we pursue economic development.
This work also involves self-determination for Indigenous communities.
We have a right to be able to make our own decisions as tribal sovereign nations. Tribes in Minnesota have a right to be fully informed about climate change, what's causing Mother Earth to heat up.
Indigenous Environmental Network also is working on their own initiatives.
We have a food sovereignty project that we operate at our national office in Bemidji, and we have different traditional seeds, corn and squash and beans and melons, and even sage.
For Minnesota Native News, this is Dan Ninham.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting The Lemonheads at The Fine Line Saturday, December 6th. Pop-punk alt-rockers The Lemonheads are back with their first studio album of original material in nearly two decades, Love Chant. They say that the 90s are back, but listening to The Lemonheads, one wonders if they ever went away. Opening the show is Aaron Ray. More information about The Lemonheads at